This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Feminism in your ears. It's another broad podcast on Joy 94.9. Keep listening. Hashtag feminism, hashtag podcast, hashtag broad on Joy 94.9.
Years ago, it's pretty much the same sorts of things they're still struggling for today, which is the equal rights for women, particularly around wage equality and superannuation.
This is Sonia on Joy 94.9, and we have the great delight to speak to Frances Bedford. She's the member for Florey in South Australia in one of the metropolitan seats, and she's going to speak to us about a really important and vital icon of the suffragette movement here and in the UK, Muriel Matters. And also we'll talk about that movie, Suffragette, which came out on Boxing Day of 2015. So, well, here in Australia release anyway. So welcome, Frances. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Excellent. So, of course, the thing is the movie has Suffragette. It's been called one of the best films of the year, enthralling, thrilling, essential viewing, an eye-opening and fierce drama. It's directed by a woman, Sarah Gavron, and it's got a whole bunch of women in it talking about, well, focusing just on the UK English suffragette movement, I guess, in a particular frame, you know, a particular point of time in history. Have you seen the film there, Frances?
Yes, I've been lucky enough to see it a couple of times, once with Helen Pankhurst, who came to Sydney and went to Melbourne as well for some of the previews.
Yes.
And she's, of course, the daughter of Sylvia Pankhurst, granddaughter of Sylvia Pankhurst,
who
is the daughter of Emmeline Pankhurst.
Yes, that's right. Helen Pankhurst was in Australia. We were lucky enough to speak to her as well when she was jet-setting around and landed in Melbourne.
She's just a marvellous woman.
Yeah, incredible. And quite a mantle that she has as far as living up, I guess, to what her predecessors have achieved.
It'd be amazing, wouldn't it, to have that sort of family background? I just can't imagine it did sort of like being related to Queen.
Yeah, it is a bit.
Yeah,
perhaps,
isn't it?
Perhaps you don't have to worry about death threats, I guess, but
no,
certainly serious, though.
The women did when they were agitating for the vote, which was one of the sad parts about it, of course.
Yes, definitely. So, of course, there, Frances, a little bit about your own background. I believe you're one of the founding secretaries for the Muriel Matters Society, and tell us a bit about that.
It's really an interesting thing. I was reading a brochure some years back and about this woman called Muriel Matters, who was the first woman to speak in the House of Commons, albeit chained to the gallery as a suffragist. And I came from New South Wales. I just thought everyone knew about it. And then 5 years later, I stumbled on it again, like the story, and I said, oh, I'll do a bit of research on it, because it was just before the 100th anniversary of it, and realised that no one knew anything about her. She's one of those people that fell through the cracks of history because she was Australian and did all her work in Britain. No one here spoke about her, and no one there spoke about her. And so we've been able to re-establish her place in the suffrage history because she did some amazing things in a short period between 1908 and 1909, and then they're going to do a whole pile of marvellous things in public housing and abolitionist sweatshops, prison reform. She's involved in so many different things that you wanted to know. I wanted to know lots more about her and use her as an example for the sorts of things we could all do today if we wanted to get involved.
So, look, the society, the Muriel Matter Society, it's only been around since 2009. That is really amazing. I am shocked and in awe as well. I mean, I feel quite sad that she has been so neglected historically, but to think this time is obviously very vital to have that changed, where she is recognised.
We set ourselves a target of several years to raise her profile, because in anything that you do, particularly if we want to make it a national, international movement, you have to spend a bit of time raising the profile. And once people know the name, then they're a bit more interested in what you're talking about underneath it. But we feel and believe very strongly that if we talk about what Muriel did 100 years ago, it's pretty much the same sorts of things we're still struggling for today, which is the equal rights for women, particularly around wage equality and superannuation.
Yes, it's funny when you look at, well, not funny, but it's amusing, I guess, in a way, watching the film, for example, for those who are newly introduced, perhaps, to the suffragette concept and movement. There are so many parallels that are so similar today. And for people living in, and you know, newly developed nations would probably find it even more so.
That's right.
You know, over 100 years later, it is a concern that we're still seeing and experiencing and hearing these same predicaments for women.
Grappling with. The British suffrage movement started around 1860 around things like health outcomes, because women had dreadful health outcomes. And so they struggled around, particularly around childbirth and babies died. There was so much disease. But the thing that really drove women to distraction in the 1860s was the Contagious Diseases Act, where women could be arrested on the suspicion of carrying a contagious disease, and we're not talking measles or mumps, whereas men were not stopped.
Wow.
So that's like the first wave of feminism. And so they began to agitate around trying to improve things to do with health. And then later on, the Pankhurst lot became embroiled in the social justice issues, but particularly around inheritance rights, because women couldn't inherit money. Just as in Pride and Prejudice, Elizabeth and the girls were going to have his estate entailed away from them. These women knew they had to get active. And then it all became apparent to them that the vote was the way to change lives. And it's still the way to change lives now. Democracy gives us the vote and the ability to make the changes that we think are essential in society today.
You've got some wind there now.
Oh.
Sorry.
I'll go and stand beside the building.
You just can't escape these little, because I can hear it all, you see.
You can.
It just picks up on when I'm looking at my screen. I can see all those little interferences. Don't worry.
I'm being bitten by ants.
Oh, no. All right. Sorry about that.
I'm outside with no shoes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so really it is about, I guess, control and autonomy over one's own body and health and well-being, and of course the right to manage one's own finances. I mean, women didn't have those were two really specific things, and in the movie, again, for people who see the film, they might be surprised to see that when the earnings come in, it is the head of the household, being male, her husband, she's a mishmash of many women, working class women at the time, the Carrie Mulligan character. She has to hand over her, you know, pittance of pay to her husband, and he divvies it up and decides what it's going to be spent on, pretty much. That's quite shocking to watch.
It's really not been that long in Australia since all of that happened, don't forget. I mean, one of the things that Joan Kerner in particular used to be horrified about was, as soon as she married, she wasn't able to work.
Gosh,
because married women didn't have the right to work. So men have always controlled the purse strings until very recently, and that's why one of the things that I think we might need to look at now, 100 years later, if we wanted to galvanise and be active on one issue, what's that one issue? Mm. And the issue, I think we have to open this discussion up, and I think it's around financial independence, because women are never going to be able to control anything if they aren't financially independent. Yeah, and I think that we're going to start have a Muriel Matters Oration every year, and we're going to have our first one in 2016. And one of the things that we'll talk about, obviously, is this is the women galvanised around the vote as a single issue that would change their lives. We'll have to have a think about how we work ourselves. All our energy is going to something that's going to really produce an outcome for us.
What's it called? What are you going to call the... I didn't catch that.
It's the Muriel Matters Oration. We'll have a memorial oration every year.
We'll have
an eminent issues of the time, or what we need. If we look back at the examples of how women organised themselves with penny postcards, because they had no other forms of communication, telephones were only just starting, they managed to get over 250,000 people to Hyde Park in June 1908 for a show of strength.
Mm.
And they spoke from 20 platforms because there was no amplification, so they had 20 speaking points.
Mm-hmm.
And they managed to get that message across to over 250,000 people.
Amazing.
And nowadays, with everything at our disposal, we are unable to do that. I mean, if I could organise or galvanise 250,000 people on a Sunday, that would be fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, I guess the equivalent would probably be online and you know, flash mobs and all those sorts of things. They can work. Yes.
Flash mobs actually puts into action something that happens online, because it would be fair to say that members of parliament aren't as impressed with online activity as they are with people in their face. People aren't as impressed with online activity as they are with physical presence.
That is
and
true.
And so to get. And we saw that with the Gulf War marches, although they were a bad example in that hundreds of thousands of people came out, but nothing happened because Howard had committed Australia to battle.
Mm.
So we need to have a way of translating this democracy, the show of democracy, into the actions of our elected members.
Mm.
But it's a lot harder than it sounds, because issues aren't as clear-cut as wanting to vote because of what it does. We don't have that luxury now. But I think one of the things that I thought was really important this year was the co-payment for Medicare, which is still happening, and we're going to have a big debate now around the reduction of penalty rates. So that's a really important thing too. That shouldn't be something that just happens automatically without us all thinking about it. That's an attack on the rights and privileges of workers.
Yes, and a lot of those are women, of course. Yep.
We all have to understand that it's hospitality today, but it's anybody's pay tomorrow. And if we have the debate and we all decide that's the way to go, well, that's fine. And not this divide and conquer business where some people are ruled off as saying, oh, well, weekends are all the same. Weekends aren't all the same. I still believe very strongly in having a day where everyone can be together, and that's not for any other view. And I think that everyone around us is tired. People are time poor. Why are they so time poor?
Predecessors fought so hard for holidays and sick days are disappearing. Many jobs now advertise a casual.
Mm. You go back to Maud in the laundry in the movie.
Yeah.
That was the only sort of work that women could get, working class women and even men, because the upper class controlled all the other sorts of jobs. So these people were working in laundries every waking moment of their life, because people didn't actually have laundry facilities in their home. And now we're going backwards. I don't understand that. And that's the sort of reason we want the Muriel Matters Society to make people think about what's happening around them. And we've used Muriel and the suffrage movement as an example in a way to make people understand where we've come from through the history in our suburbs today. People in Melbourne and Adelaide and Sydney are locked up in sheds selling shirts and skirts and dresses. Then go to the shops and are selling for much, 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 much more than they see for.
Cool.
So it's those sorts of principles that are still around 100 years today from the time of the suffragette movement and their struggle.
Yeah.
And when you look at their struggle went from the 1860s and only actually changed when the war came. The First World War is what changed everything for women.
Mm.
Because until then, there was no sign of the men giving women the vote.
Do you think if the First World War hadn't happened and they hadn't needed to use and exploit those women for labour to make weapons, do you think it would have been even harder?
Longer? Well, I think so. I think about it a lot because it needed that sort of cataclysmic change to make the difference. Now, the interesting part was Asquith kept his promise and gave women the vote on the same terms as men were after the war. But because so many men had died, he put an age restriction on the women so that there were still more men voting than women. So you wonder, don't you?
Yes. Now, looking at Muriel Matters again, she's got such a great name. Is that
her? I know. It's real.
It's real? She didn't make that.
That's right.
Okay.
No, no. The Matters family are a big family, and there's some conjecture, and we're still researching, a derivation of the word metres, M-E-T-T-E-R-S, as in metres, stoves and cookers.
Okay.
You're a bit too young probably to remember all of them, but some of the first cooking appliances were metres stoves, and we believe her uncle Charles wrote one of the first industrial agreements in Melbourne.
Wow.
So we've got lots of research to do, and we're hoping very much that anyone who might be around who knows anything at all about the Muriel Matters story will get in touch with us because there are still so many holes in our account of what she did.
Right.
She was
How can they get in touch with you? What's the best way?
Just Google Muriel Matters, or our website will come up. When I first Googled Muriel 9 years ago or 8 years ago, I only got two things. If you do it now, you'll get lots. Just look for the Muriel Matters Society, and any information that you find is going to be really helpful. We're about to establish chapters all over Australia, and there's a woman has been appointed captain of the Victorian chapter, and so Eileen Luscombe will be around doing things for the society pretty soon in the new year.
Cool, right. So looking for any traces of her family, I guess, and what they did in Victoria with the Matters?
Yes, well, some of her direct descendants actually live in Victoria now.
Okay.
Her niece, Joslyn, is about 93, I think, in Doncaster. She's a marvellous woman, had been an active unionist all her life in the Teachers Federation.
Wow.
A marvellous woman. So the feistiness in the family certainly was
it's genetic,
there.
Obviously.
But she has family in Perth as well. But Muriel acted in Sydney and Melbourne and New Zealand in the early parts of her life and has connections to nearly every state in Australia. So we're hopeful there'll be traces of her everywhere. To people that she's written letters to in the past, but none of those letters have come to light yet. So we're very much interested in finding any information that we can on her anywhere. So everyone who's listening is now deputised into the Muriel Matters Society and can be part of it. We very much want to make our own movie here about Muriel's story because her origins in Australia are what made her as courageous as she was in the English movement.
Well, I think. Don't worry about a movie, personally. I think this is a television series.
Oh, easy. Look,
easy.
We've got children's books happening.
Yeah.
Things happening.
Really wonderful drama. This could be a great drama because she's a traveller, she's a journey person, she's certainly an adventurer, an educator. She was an actress too, so she's done it all.
Yes.
This would be perfect for an HBO show, wouldn't it?
That's right. Well, she was proposed to seven times, she tells us in her
writings,
and we just thought it was her husband had to ask her seven times. We now believe it was seven different men, so we're pretty excited about that as well. And she was a pacifist. She was involved in the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and tried to stop the First World War. So she was involved with the Women's Electrical Society, teaching women how to use electrical appliances.
Wow.
She was into public housing. She was involved in the Dublin dock strikes of 1913. She was in everything.
Wow. Amazing woman. Yeah, we certainly shouldn't be forgotten, that's for sure. And it's great to see that there's a rekindling, a reinterest in what in the work that she's done and the lives she must have affected so many people.
She did. She absolutely did. And one of the first things we've been able to engage in here is prison reform, because that's one of the things she became involved with after she was imprisoned in Holloway Prison after the Grill protest, and so we work very closely here in South Australia with a group called Seeds of Affinity, who help newly released women prisoners become active in the community again.
And for you yourself personally, why have you taken up this cause, I suppose?
Well, I've been involved with the Labor Party for a long time, and I'm a member, obviously, of Parliament, and I've tried desperately to make political parties relevant and interest people in becoming involved in what's going on in Parliament, and it's become apparent to me that unless I can explain to people why Parliament is important, I can't get them involved in the public life that I think so important for all of us now to make sure we have a society that we all truly value and want to be in.
Yeah, inclusive and everything. It's really important.
That's right. Really. Every single person is important. Every single person's job is important. Every person's potential is important, and their contribution is vital to all of us. And I just want everyone to understand that that's the sorts of things that will make our society truly great.
Well, those South Australian genes are strong.
Well, they are, because we say that's because we were founded by free settlers, not convicts. Not that we're having a go at Victoria, New South Wales, because I was born in New South Wales, clearly from convict stock, but I've seen the light.
And what is the difference, do you think? I mean, South Australia, someone was telling me that votes for women and representation was one of the earliest parts, was actually South Australia.
Correct. South Australia is the first place in the world to grant women what we call dual suffrage, the right to stand for election and the right to vote at the same time. New Zealand actually granted women the right to vote a year earlier. However, without the right to stand for election, you're still you're still behind men in as far as being equal. So the suffrage movement was all over Australia and really the world, because Australia was linked to Britain because a lot of its new settlers were from England, and American women were also struggling for the vote at the same time. But South Australia was able to get it through, through the work of the Women's Christian Temperance Union and the strength of a woman called Catherine Helen Spence, who was a very feisty Scottish journalist, and another woman called Mary Lee. And these women, in conjunction with Elizabeth Webb Nicol from the Women's Christian Temperance Union, really organised strongly. And organisation is the key to reform. If you can get everybody on the same page, moving towards the same goal, you certainly achieve it a lot faster. So in our story, though, which is also a 12-part miniseries, the men decided to only give women the right to stand for election in an attempt to make the bill lose. They thought, well, no one's going to be smart enough, silly enough to vote to give women both right. But in one of those quirks of fate, the vote was very close, and one of the people who was supposed to vote against it was out at dinner and didn't come back in time. And so the vote went through by one. But South Australia was one of the last places in the world where a woman was elected, so we don't really understand the pressures that made that happen. But in England, where women had struggled for so long, they were elected as soon as they were able to say they were ready to go in. So it's always about knowing the next thing you want to do. So you organise around something ready, already with your eye on the future.
Okay, and those are really, that's a really good thing to say to all women out there and young women coming up, and not just for politics, but in anything, any sort of area
that's
you
want
to work in, particularly media, because there is a big deficit still with women representing.
And women running radio or TV, it's very, very difficult to get through that glass ceiling, isn't it?
Brilliant, and there's some great filmmakers from South Australia, women ones as well.
Well, that's why we so much want the film to be made here.
Yes.
There's a biography. There's a biography coming out on Muriel next year.
Okay.
And very early in 2017 might be out. The publishers time all these things to make the greatest impact.
But yeah, of course.
Wouldn't it be a tragedy if this story that has roots in Australia is picked up by another country because we're too slow to see the benefit of a woman's story? You know, Suffragette is only the third movie made about women and suffrage.
It's really bizarre, isn't it? I mean, I was shocked. I was looking for more evidence that there was actually another film or two out there, and I was just deeply almost ashamed that there wasn't. Mm. I was still thinking, really?
Well, it's a bit like that in women's sport, though, isn't it? Women's sport.
Not paid the same, etc. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing about it. And so you've got to start thinking to yourself, well, they don't want you to have the vote. They don't want you to see the story because they're worried about what you might do with the power that's generated from those things.
Goodness me. Probably the same things, but, you know, it will just be different, obviously a little different.
But we all need each other.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no purpose in even thinking of an Amazonian world where sort of men are locked up in a public corner.
It's not going to happen.
No. No one wants that.
It's funny how people think that. People have, the more that I've sort of come back into, you know, the ideas of feminism, the more that I've had men treating me quite badly in some respects and quite shocking in others. And I don't think they realise what they're doing. It's like, I'm still the same person. I still think of you as my friend. Why suddenly is it changed? Why?
Anyone who was involved in the suffrage movement was denigrated. See, feminism is a word that's being used now as some sort of nasty, horrible thing. Even bra burning. You know how everyone thinks the million bras. One bra was burnt once in a rally in America.
Yeah, once, I think. I saw one photograph.
Right. One bra. Once.
Like
and
once.
All of a sudden, it was painted like we were all out burning bras. And just as in the time of the suffrage movement in the 1900s, lots of women thought it was a stupid idea.
Mm.
You know, why? It's the same argument around women wanting to be priests. Lots of people don't think that's a very good idea for lots of really silly, or not silly, I mean, they're important reasons for them, but the world's not going to change because there are equal rights. I mean, I don't want to be a woman priest, but I think a woman who wants to be a priest has that right.
Yes, it's like same-sex equality with the marriage as well. It's like if you want to get married, then fine.
Exactly.
You may get divorced as well, whatever.
Well, exactly. I mean, I don't understand why a male-dominated society can allow a thing called the factor to come in because it suits them. Because all of marriage is really around division of property.
Yeah, that's what it was for.
It's not about. It's not about anything else.
Maybe a wedding party, but that's
right. Well, women used to belong to their fathers before they were married, and they belonged to their sons.
And that was for property, again.
That's right. And this feudal sort of division of us being traded between husbands and fathers, it's just the sort of crazy stuff that
still happens, sadly.
Incomprehensible, isn't it?
And still occurs in some parts of the world.
Exactly, and we think we're so enlightened. It really only wasn't. I often use this example when I'm talking in public about them with the mere amount of society. Women in Australia would never have left their homes without their hats and gloves. Their heads were always covered with sticks, always, to move the struggle forward. How far would you be prepared to go to help the next person learn English, perhaps to get a better job? Those sorts of things are still happening around us today.
Yeah, I know. It's not easy. But thankfully we have some great icons and people from the past who have shown that it is possible to do these things and to lead the way.
Motivator.
Muriel Matters. Yep. And, of course, yourself there, Frances Bedford.
Oh, in a very minor sort of way.
Well, you know, hey. And having, I believe you had dinner with Dr. Helen Pankhurst. It must have been quite a nice evening with good discussion.
Oh, we were lucky enough to meet her through another terrific Australian expat in London, Irene Cockcroft, who does curation of women's exhibitions. And Irene organised a symposium around Emily Wilding Davidson, who is in the movie, the woman who went under the horse by accident. And I was able to be one of the speakers at that symposium where Helen was also speaking. So we were able to catch up and meet there and, you know, forge a bit of a friendship around the whole business. But, of course, Helen is a descendant of Sylvia Pankhurst, who is my favourite Pankhurst. So I'm clearly enamoured and in awe of her already. And it's great to find her to be such a terrific woman.
Yeah, I know. So, doing lots of stuff that she does for CARE International and things like that. She's... I mean, she could not do something like that, really. I mean,
well,
That's
exactly right.
Yeah.
The power of genetic material and nurture and so forth. So a great family and a great family legacy.
Mm.
But, of course, there's another sister that a lot of people don't know about, and that's Adela Pankhurst, who died here in Australia in the 60s.
Oh.
She was banished by her mother, Emmeline, so she's a sister to Christabel and Sylvia, and was sent to Australia and died here.
Oh, dear.
Another loss piece of history. And all the daughters were involved in setting up the WSPU, and yet the only name we all know is Emmeline Pankhurst. So the same with our suffrage movement here in Australia. We only know a couple of names, like Vida Goldstein, for instance.
Mm.
And I think people in Victoria would be hard-pressed to name another person involved in the suffrage movement there.
That will change, hopefully. I'm sure that through the archaeology, really, for Muriel Matters and the Muriel Matters Society, I'm sure that this will be good for all states, interstate.
I think so.
This could really get something happening. And it's the right thing to do, let's face it.
Well, it's up to us. We have to do it.
All you need to do is get
not
some
words.
Exactly. Get some more academics onto it and across all the states to do some
research. Well, the Victorian Women's Trust has been really good to the Muriel Matters Society. They're members of our society and have been very supportive of us. And we're looking forward to strengthening all the links that we can with each state, because each state's story is different. But we'll feed into the major story that is the Australian story, because women, of course, were given the vote throughout Australia in 1901 at the time of federation, and that makes our country one of the first countries in the world to be in that position.
Excellent. No, it was great watching the credits at the end of the film Suffragette and watching New Zealand come up. I'm from New Zealand, of course, so...
Yeah. We see Muriel went to New Zealand, so we've got to follow that link.
I'm really curious what she did over there.
Well, she was part of the Robert Bruff Theatre Company that toured there, but I think once she went anywhere, she made friends. So
one
of the things that I want to do next year is go to New Zealand, because my auntie actually lived in New Zealand before she died.
Yeah.
And so and my son's married to a New Zealander, so we're all connected and we need to strengthen those connections, because all of the New Zealanders came from expats were all expats of Britain. So, we need to strengthen all those links. And New Zealand does some fantastic things. I'm so proud to be associated with anyone from New Zealand because of all the wonderful things they do.
Yeah, that is true. And Shrek, the wonderful sheep. He had a state funeral. they can do wacky things. But I don't know if you know about this, but the Cook Islands technically was the first place for the vote for women. Not many people know that, and it's not really followed up at all.
No, when you talk about votes for women, there are all sorts of qualifications.
Yeah, there's all sorts of loops and, clauses.
That's right. The thing that we all talk about first is Wyoming as a state in America. But then, of course, there's the Isle of Man and different places. And women had the right to vote in councils. But it's universally agreed that New Zealand was the first country.
Yeah.
And South Australia is not actually mentioned in the credits of the movie at all, being the first place in the world to grant dual rights. And that's because we're not a country, we're a state. But I will always introduce myself as coming from South Australia, the first place in the world to grant dual suffrage. And that then just starts the conversation. There were women active all over the world
at all different times
for all different things. So,
But if you know Cook Island women, you'd know why they got it first. They would have demanded
it.
They're very bossy.
Well, I mean, it's a bit like the Maori population. What a great thing they did with treaty. Whereas Aboriginal people here in Australia didn't ask for it, so they didn't get anything.
Yes, there's very complex situations, and it varies from country to country, I guess, as well. But excellent. Look, Frances, I think we'll leave it there. But
I know, you might get 2 minutes without me.
No, you're actually really clear now. It's perfect. But I've realised I have spoken to you for a very long time.
As long as you don't mind, that's fine with me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Excellent.
And next time I come to Melbourne, I'll make a point of letting you know what we're up to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, where can people go again to find out more or to get information about the Muriel Matters Society?
Just Google Muriel Matters Society, or actually Muriel Matters, and you'll see the Muriel Matters Society come up. There's only one Muriel Matter Society, which is from Adelaide, but we will be establishing a Victorian chapter early in the new year.
Cool.
And there'll be activities in every state throughout the year. I mean, it's not going to be an onerous thing to be part of, but we're certainly going to do a couple of things around the anniversaries of her first, which she was the first woman to become an air, well, the first person to be an aeronautical protester. She dropped brochures from the sky.
Oh, yes, the balloon. I almost
That's
forgot.
Right, the balloon's right out there.
Yeah.
The first woman to speak in the House of Commons. And she was also the first full-time paid organiser for the Women's Freedom League caravan tour.
Wow.
So we have events around those particular activities every year. And interesting speakers. And as I said, the Muriel Matters Oration will start next year. And we'll look at doing that from various states to give everybody an opportunity to be involved in all the things we're starting.
Oh, excellent. It's going to be great. No matter what people have as an opinion on what it's, you know, how it's portraying women and suffragettes, it is, I guess, trying to make it as, I wouldn't say palatable, but as accessible, I guess, for viewers.
That's right. And they got a lot
That's
of
why.
An hour and a half. They packed a lot of the different concepts into the movie. And, of course, that's just the tip of the story. It's not the whole story
no,
at all.
No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Again, it needs to be a television series. That's what I'm thinking.
I agree.
You know, something on one of those Netflix or something. Imagine it could be quite successful. I'm pretty sure of it. Well, we would watch it.
Exactly. And everyone we have an influence on would too.
We'd make them watch it. No.
That's right. Thanks so much, Sonia.
Thank you very much, Frances Bedford, for speaking to us. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, sisters. You've been listening to this broad podcast here on Joy 94.9. Don't forget to tune in to us Monday nights at 9 p.m. on Joy for feminism in your ears.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.